Bojan Lewis, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on this book, your first book of poems, winner of the American Book Award. Did you go to the ceremony?
I did, yeah, in San Francisco, but I forgot to RSVP, so it was a little awkward.
So they didn't want to let you in? They called security on you?
No, they were really friendly and amicable about it.
Yeah, yeah, they're great people, absolutely. Yeah. It's a fantastic award, and congratulations. It definitely deserves it. Before we get into some of the poems in the book itself, I wanted to start off with a little bit of your biography. You were an electrician for 15 years.
Something like that, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that, being an electrician and going from that to being a full-time tenure-track professor at a very nice university.
Yeah. Well, I had always done a little construction here and there. In college and after college, I moved to Alaska to work on a construction crew.
Really?
And then came back and couldn't really find any framing jobs or anything like that. But an electrician was looking to train someone as a helper and an apprentice, so I just started doing that and, you know, just kept at it through grad school, after grad school, really up until maybe last year when I had all my tools stolen. So I feel like that was a sign from the universe to, like, slow down and just focus on the teaching and writing.
Well, I certainly hope your laptop isn't stolen. And
Oh, yeah. I've learned my lesson to keep everything close and locked up and nothing in my car.
That's funny. One of the things about being a poet is, to use a term that's becoming perhaps a little too popular, and I don't want to misstate what I'm trying to get at, but poets tend to be mindful. They tend to be rooted in the moment. They tend to think about things that they're experiencing visually and viscerally. And I'm wondering what, as an electrician, working with energy and energy, you sending energy from one place to another, harnessing it, using conduits for it. I'm wondering what you learned about energy that might have helped your poetry or helped you to understand how language works.
I think it was fairly organic. I mean, now that I think about it, you know, I think back on it, it seems so obvious, but I think with electricity, a sense of grounding, literally grounding the circuit and electricity to the earth is like the most important thing, so that you don't get shocked or electrocuted or things don't blow up and everything goes correctly. So I felt similar with poetry. Like, you know, like you said, it takes an attention to language, to rhythm, to acoustics, to sound, a present of the moment, but also harnessing the present or of the future and the past.
Right.
You know, and electricity is all about making solid, non-erroneous connections so that you do have a complete circuit that doesn't have fault or any chance to arc, or, you know, so it's a continuous smooth flow of energy.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Yeah, you know, have you ever written an essay about energy and poetry and using a metaphorical structure of being an electrician? Because I think that would be fantastic. I can't help but think of this interview I read years ago from Don DeLillo, the fiction writer, and he says that sentences are conduits, and the writer's job is to bend those conduits, to break them, and to let the energy spark. And and just reading just the title of your new book, it's called Currents. Just the title itself. I was reading this introduction to one of your poems by a guy named Rashad Thomas, and he wrote extensively on the possible meanings of the title Currents. But I can't help but think of currents as currents of energy. But let me ask you how you came up with this title and why was this the title?
Yeah, so I think the genesis of this book happened in a modernism seminar that I took during grad school with Cynthia Hoag. And I was really concerned with tercets and, you know, terza rima, also Dante's Inferno, just because, you know, a basic circuit is a ground, a neutral, and a hot. So then that was sort of an obvious thing to keep thinking about at work while I heard myself all those things.
Right.
And then was trying to think of poetry and getting my homework done. But that was the first poem, and it it was just an obvious, like, well, this is what I'm writing about, right. Currents, like literally just currents of electricity. But also I didn't want it to be as simplistic as that. So I thought about what's all the other definitions,
right.
Meaning
yeah.
Allusions to currents or currency, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, poems sparked from there, puns intended, but.
Right. No, I love that language. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, definitely. You must have come to a point after you that first initial spark where you realized you had a book as opposed to you'd been writing poems. And at what point was that? And what was the process like to put the entire book together?
Yeah, I think a couple of years maybe after that, I realized I was like, maybe this is a chapbook. At first, it was like a long sequence of triptychs and a triptych of poems. But then I got tired of the threes and I wanted to hide them somewhere else in different sort of forms and syllabic meters. Once I realized I had a book, I realized I needed more poems.
Uh-huh.
But also, I didn't want my book to be this gargantuan long thing. I really like concise books of poems. I think when I realized I had a book was probably the hardest part, because then I agonized over order. And then as every word then became doubly sort of like atrocious, maybe. Like, I didn't want it. I sort of scoured the book to like not repeat certain wordage or terms, or, you know, I was trying to then make it as multiflorous as possible.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, I reordered the book 10, 15 times, pulled poems, added poems, trimmed poems. And all, you know, during that time I was submitting it and I didn't know what it was in its current form. But once it got accepted, the first thing they said was like, this is great, but you need to reorder it.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
And I knew that and I couldn't find the order, but I had a team of readers who offered me some insight about where maybe the voice started, a voice started, and where a voice ended,
right.
And some sort of scatterings in between. And that really helped me sort of shape it to its present form. And it took another year even after that.
Yeah, yeah. Getting together a book of poems is not something you do in a semester off.
Yeah, seriously.
You know, isn't that funny? I've been teaching. I've been a professor for so long that I measure time by semesters. I'll say, you know, even with people who aren't professors or aren't part of the culture, I tend to do that. So sorry about that. You know, it's you started off as an electrician. I'm talking to Beau Jean Lewis about his new collection of poems called Currents. You start off as an electrician. I mean, that's how you made your living. And then you were accepted into, I think, Arizona State University in their very prestigious and fantastic MFA program. You even got the Virginia G. Piper Fellow in Residence, which is, I guess that's something given to an MFA graduate where they can teach for a year?
No, this is the Virginia G. Piper Fellow in Residence is a new sort of fellowship for alumni of the MFA program.
Uh-huh. Right.
That was sort of so I got that beginning of last year.
Right. And then that, I'm sure, opened the opportunity for where you are now teaching Native American Studies and Creative Writing at University of Arizona. But the transition into an academic setting, I'm imagining, must have started with teaching freshman composition. Was that the case for you?
Oh yeah, yeah. And like as an adjunct in Phoenix.
Oh my God!
You know,
freeway flyer.
At three different community colleges all over the city, part time, and then also full to part time working as an electrician. So there was a few years where I was doing both. You know, 7 days a week.
Wow.
And then finally, I guess a few years ago, I got my full time instructorship as a instructor of rec comp, and you know, still did construction and electrical on the side here and there.
Right. In California, we call people who teach at multiple colleges freeway flyers. Do they call them that in Arizona too?
I don't know. I don't know what you call it. Miserable, I think.
Yeah, that's funny. But so, yeah, you really paid your dues, man. And what I was interested in is asking which was more creatively nurturing for you, working as an electrician or working as a teacher of composition?
That's a hard one. I mean, I think both have its moments where it's dull and sort of vacuous and you feel like a dullard. Especially in electrical, when you're like, I don't know, you're trimming out a house and you're just installing switches and receptacles and mm-hmm. lights. That is probably the most boring part of the job. And then also, you know, I think with composition, sometimes it can be hard to read beyond the content of your course or even the content of your student papers. So you're, you know, reading tons of proposal essays on, you know, gargantuan topics that you can't contain in six pages, like gun control or abortion or anything. And it kind of just, you know, it stalls your thought and creative process.
Yeah, no, absolutely. My first job was at a community college. I taught at Modesto Junior College, full-time composition mm-hmm. for 5 years.
Wow, yeah. Yeah.
It is difficult to remember that this sounds kind of weird, but almost difficult to remember that you're dealing with language and that you're dealing with what you love, you know, because it does become, you know, in many ways routine and repetitive. What I used to do, I remember this quote I think I encountered, I forget where I encountered it, but it was, I think, Robert Frost perhaps said, a writer should either farm or else cheat his employer. You know, and that's always made sense to me because, you know, as you farm, you have seasons. And, you know, if you don't farm, you got to cheat your employer and try to find a way to write. And I found teaching composition, I would come into the class sometimes and say, okay, everybody write for half an hour.
and then
I'd pull out my laptop, well, my pen and pencil, start writing. But it's a challenge. It's a challenge. What about now? You teach creative writing now.
Yeah, so I just, started my first year as an assistant professor at U of A and taught a graduate poetry workshop and an undergraduate literature course. So,
wow. Yeah, but that's it's certainly a lot more, I imagine it would be a lot more easy to convert that energy into your own work.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and you're working with, you know, young, talented writers who, you know, have that drive that sometimes disappears. And it's, I think at this point, sometimes you just get up and you sit at your desk and you're like, well, here we go. Let's just get some words on the page.
Right. And did you grow up in Arizona?
I did. I grew up in Window Rock and Flagstaff.
Okay. And are there a lot of Mexicans there?
In Flagstaff, there was a good amount. Everyone always thought I was Mexican.
Yeah.
So,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah, the reason why I asked is because some of your poems seem to really understand a lot of the Mexican experience in Arizona and, you know, pretty mm-hmm. much anywhere. And I'm thinking especially of the poem called El Hombre, which you actually write, you actually code switch in that. The first line is, sure, the sangre was real. What wasn't came from una cerda. And you continue to code switch. And I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about how this poem came about.
So it's based on a painting, I guess. It's a long, long, ephrastic conversation with this poem by Paul Pletka, neo-surrealist. And this painting, Nuestro Señor El Deseado, is in the Phoenix Art Museum. It's this huge triptych. And Wednesday afternoons are their free days. So, you know, I was feeling really burned out by, I think I was on a 6-5 comp.
Oh my God. Jeez.
Schedule. And so I would just hop on the light rail, get off at, the Phoenix Art Museum and sit in front of this painting and listen to like death metal for 2 hours and write.
Oh my God.
And this poem, you know, I mean, this poem is like 50 pages or something, but it's only 10 and it's published, finished form. But there's a lot of characters, a lot of like symbols in that painting. Uh-huh. a lot of like sort of migrant workers, farm workers. And I think I was just trying to have a conversation with them and thinking back to, you know, the Mexicans I grew up with and have worked around, South Americans that I encountered on job sites, working as an electrician in Phoenix, and in Flagstaff. So, and then in reading up on the customs of like Catholicism and the indigenous sort of religions and ideology in Mexico, because that painting is sort of collision of all those things.
Right, right. And I should have clarified that El Hombre is part of the larger poem, Nuestro Señor del Desollado. And you have this wonderful line. It says, the priests, Maya deity actors and shamans have methods against flesh decaying completely or turning to leather. I love that line, the Maya deity actors. That's beautiful. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I was just trying to understand what was happening. And you know, there's these, like, people wearing, you know, the costumes of the deities.
Right.
And the man on the cross, you can tell he's wearing human flesh. It's like a human wearing human flesh and is supposed to look like Jesus. So, you know, I was interested in other sort of like Catholic artifacts and like saints where they preserve the flesh and keep sort of like, I don't know, I'm forgetting the verb or language here, like totems of these saints. So like, and I don't know, it's somewhere in my reading that there's a ritual where like, people can preserve elements of flesh, and it basically turns to the leather, like animals, right?
Yeah, no, I love the image, and it makes me think of the whole, you know, spiritual rituals and how they are, you know, like actors. You know, you're acting out, but you're acting out, you know, if we even go back to the, you know, the very original theater, you know, it was always, you know, for some sort of deity or group of deities. And it was really, it's just a really beautiful, beautiful collection. You mentioned death metal. You're a musician too, aren't you?
Yes.
What do you play?
I play guitar. Been sort of teaching myself bass. Grew up playing classical piano.
No way.
and I have a bunch of synthesizers and drum machines that I've been sort of learning how to incorporate into things.
That's funny because, you know, I have certain rhythms of the day, you know, like in the morning, I listen to classical piano. In the afternoons, I'll listen to jazz, heavy with piano because I like piano a lot.
Yeah,
but on my way home from work, I put on the death metal, man. I like death metal. You know, it's kind of exorcises something in me. But if you were to recommend a death metal band, which would it be?
I've been going back to a lot of Brujeria.
Brujeria. Oh, man, they are awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I would definitely recommend them.
Yeah. They're,
or Cattle Decapitation, for sure.
Oh, that one I don't know. Can I ask you to read a section of that that long poem, maybe the last one?
Sure.
Which is called Xipe Totec.
Yeah. Xipe Totec. I'm no carrion vulture's circle. Could say I straddle birth and passing. Bleeding men are what grow from heart. Bleeding men are what grow the harvest for me, for you, with you. Some, they scream and cry, drink Christ's blood. In frenzy, all forget that the reason his life spilt across beget after beget was remembrance of your pitiful life. Sorry as sins. Only earth is more than me, greater yet than you and him, an entity for war, celebration of the judged, enemy, and heathen, the celebration of the fraud in the pure and holy sense. Look at the crowd. I'm the small man whose kin is missing, a shawl warming an old woman, the prayer, the pray to, the offering and the offered, the bent back and the harvest.
That was Bojan Lewis reading from his book of poems, Currents. That was beautiful. You know, have you ever thought of doing an audio book? You read really wrong.
No, but I am working on a project of puzzles set to sort of soundscape. So, I mean, I think there will be definitely a performative or, you know, very conscious reading style that goes along with those.
Oh, have you ever listened to any of symphonic death metal?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, because you could write a whole opera, man, or something like that. You know, with the music and all that. But you're not only an electrician, a professor, a poet, but you're also a fiction writer. You have written and published several short stories. Do you have a collection in the works?
Yeah, actually, I'm just finishing it now. I was working on it for a few hours this morning. So I think I will be done tonight.
And no way.
Send it off to go find its place in the world.
Wow. And what's the name of the, do you have a title?
Yeah, right now I'm, you know, it's just Sinking Bell.
Wow. And what's the difference for you when you're writing fiction and writing poetry?
I think definitely fiction for me is like a sense of stamina. Poems are really easy for me to get in and out of once they're sort of in process and in motion.
Right.
You know, I can sit down and work on a couplet or a stanza, you know, for an hour and then leave and then come back the next day in another hour. I can just, you know, maintain it and I can harness or memorize the stanza. But with fiction, I mean, if I leave it alone for a week, I need to sit down and read the whole thing aloud and like really re-enter the psychology of different characters. And, you know, it's sort of like writing a collection in a single piece. You know, there's all these pieces in motion. So it takes a long time, and it really is just like it's sitting down and putting in the time and carving out the time
to work
on the fiction.
I think that's a very wise way of putting it, that you know, to re-enter fiction, like when you're working on a longer story, and I'm assuming your stories are somewhat long because of this experience you're talking about, rather than flash fiction, is that, yeah, you have to re-enter that landscape on a daily basis, and if you're out of it for a while, which is also another reason why it's good not to drink too much or to do anything that impedes you from re-entering, you know. And so are you ever going to, do you like novels or is it short story your genre?
Short story is my favorite form, my favorite genre. But, I mean, I love novels. I devour novels when I can.
Wow.
You know, I try to have a novel going every week. You know, I'm
really
try to read a novel every 2 weeks, and a semester maybe every 3 weeks. Usually, ideally, it's every week, but you know, that never happens.
Do you teach novels as well?
I did last semester or the spring semester of 2019. I taught the poetics and narrative something of work and apprenticeship.
Uh-huh.
I forget the title, but yeah, we read a number of novels about work.
Oh, wow. So the name of the collection is Currents Poems by Bojan Lewis. Bojan Lewis is, you know, I met you a few times, once at AWP and once in Silver City at the book festival, and you're very young. You look like you could still be an undergraduate, and you're having a baby. Congratulations. And
yes,
I suspect that we're going to be hearing from you very shortly about that new collection of stories and maybe a novel and maybe a death metal album of some sort or performance art. It's all the doors are open for you, brother. Congratulations. And I really wish you the best.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I hope we see all that, too.
I'm Daniel Chacon. I'd like to thank my guest, Bojan Lewis, for joining me on Words on a Wire. And we'll see you next week.